This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardim. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
It is Saturday night, my friends. Let's talk money. That's what the show's all about. Slow, steady Eddie wins the race. Work, save, invest, repeat. Work, save, invest, repeat. Work, save, invest. Just that's what you need to do. Consistently put money aside and buy good quality assets with that money. It's called dollar cost averaging. Just keep on trucking and you'll be satisfied you did that after about 25 years. It's a slow, steady journey. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun, but it takes time. Don't become impatient and don't give up. So if you're 25, you start. And trust me, by the time you're 50, you are going to thank me and more importantly, thank yourself for all of your efforts. And that's when it gets quite interesting. A lot of interesting things to do with your money. And I will say less today than there was a few years ago. And perhaps that's why crypto and all these alternative assets are attracting some money. But Susan Anderson, she's an analyst with Canaccord. She covers a lot of consumer products and brands. And Susan, you know, it's I have to scratch my head. Roughly 25 years ago, there were about 7,000 companies that traded in the United States, you know, major companies on the major boards. Today, it's about 4,500 names, basically half amount of companies to choose from. The same problem in Canada. We used to be a big mining company in a country, but they just got, we got hollowed out, so to speak. So there are less asset classes to choose from. But, you know, I want to open with Susan. I love talking to you because my daughter is a e.l.f. beauty consumer, yeah. And she's into it, and she's 16, so she's a fabulous barometer and gauge. But my son, who's 20, he spends so much time trading cryptos, different networks, buying these coins, weird things. A lot of it's junk, and he knows it. But Susan, if you pay attention to the crypto trading of 20-something, and I think it's more male than female participating, it is .com 2.0, the wild, wild west on steroids. And you know something, Susan? People are trading this stuff, and they're not paying taxes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah, no wonder why no one's buying my beauty names anymore.
Well, but it's interesting, isn't it? Because money does flow, and you just bring up a brilliant point. Thank you for that. You know, I'm a trade and technical investor. I look for good companies and just try to trade the good companies and get a piece of the trade. I sold e.l.f. Beauty. What, $198, Jack, did we get for it?
In and around there. It's definitely lower, that's for sure,
it's 160, from where we sold. It's 160 right now. What's that, Susan?
We've had a pullback, so maybe you should buy some more then.
Well, technically, it looks lower to me. It's in the middle of no man's land. You know, Estee Lauder got above the 200-day. I think it's trying to hold that level. But Ulta Beauty, obviously, is what's taking them all down. So why don't you speak to the other company you do watch, a big retailer, Ulta Beauty.
Yeah, so Ulta came out and just really spooked everyone a week or two ago with some comments that beauty's slowing and it's across all price points and not just prestige, which, you know, we think they lost maybe some share to Sephora there. So it's really just this thought of, you know, consumers spending a little bit less on beauty. We think it's kind of more normalization. You know, we can't have double-digit growth forever, right?
So, but my daughter said that. She said, Dad, everyone already has the new products. They're stocked up on them. So now they're waiting for a new launch of product. How much validity is in that statement?
Correct. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, a couple years ago, we had a lot of newness in the beauty category. Last year was kind of ho-hum, you know, not as much newness, which I think hurt Ulta. This year, supposedly, we're going to get some more newness in the back half. We'll see what happens.
It's amazing because newness attracts because it's new. And around newness, there must be a story. And Susan, again, let me pivot over here now to crypto trading with Elliot, my 20-year-old kid. And it's incredible. I made dinner for him last night, a beautiful barbecued fish dinner. He said, Daddy, do you mind if I go up to my bedroom? I got a lot of work to do. And it's around 6:30. They trade this stuff like at dinner time. It's just humble. So off he went to trade some crypto. But the word he used, I said, Elliot, what is with this particular coin you're buying? He said, Dad, it's all about the people who created it and the narrative around it. The story, in other words. And Jack, you and I talked about the importance of the story.
Well, that's what I'm hearing with Susan here. The story, the newness. How much newness, Wolf, is there coming in Beauty?
Don't ask me. Ask Susan.
But that is the point. So they need a narrative. They need a story. Yeah. They need something. You talk about the fact that, you know, Alta sort of stumbled here a little bit. Elf is lower. A lot of retail investors, you know, you look at it, it's a lower price, but the momentum's going the wrong way. So they buy, they're trying to catch a falling knife. As opposed to, like I said, in beauty, what's new, what's fresh, and I guess towards the back end of the year, Susan, what are you seeing?
Well, I think, you know, as we kind of go into the summer, let's pay attention to the sun care category. There's a lot of newness in sun care, a lot of new brands popping up. You know, they have, like, shimmery sun care that gives you a
little shimmer. Oh, my God, you're killing it.
That's a story, Wolf. You got to hear the story. Hang on.
Shimmery. Oh, my daughter. My daughter's talking. Oh, my God.
Like the Elf's new sun care lines as well, Suntouchables. My daughter loves that that brand.
Well, which one? Which one?
It's Suntouchables. I'm sure your daughter buys that.
Untouchable?
SPF sun, like the sun.
Oh, Suntouchable.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it has SPF in it, but it also adds a little cover, or it has it in clear as well, but she loves that. So I think the sun care brand, there's going to be a lot of newness this summer. It was pretty good last year, but I think this year there's a lot of new small brands popping up and really kind of capitalizing on people, you know, wanting to take care of their skin. And also they want to buy multi-purpose products, right? So sun care with also moisturizing and, you know, some tint to it, and maybe like also improves wrinkles. So I think that's an area that we should really watch this summer.
Interesting. Well, I'm curious if it's going to be a scorcher of a summer because we didn't have much of a winter. And I think perhaps we are going to have such a summer. The Perrigo company, you follow that. That trades on the New York Stock Exchange. Talk about that company if you don't mind.
So that one's very interesting. So they just rolled out their over-the-counter birth control, Opill. So it's the first ever over-the-counter birth control, which, you know, we think is going to be huge. It's going to allow access to birth control for many consumers that didn't have access before. And it's just going to offer more convenience, too. Instead of having to get that prescription, you just walk into the pharmacy, pick it up, and go. So that's one thing. That's one catalyst, I think, for the stock.
But it's funny because Jack asked about that, and Jack, if that was a baby food company, sort of the opposite. Good thing we asked. We thought we're buying car carriages and stuff like that with that one. Don't own it, obviously. What about Estee Lauder? There is the juggernaut that you have on your list. Down on the mat, blaming China, blaming its inventory woes. And the irony about that company, what caught my attention about Estee Lauder was how that was very dominant and very much reliant on travel, because when you're waiting at the airport 17 hours in advance of your flight, what do? People spend money and they shop. So I found that to be a unique aspect of its sales channel. So speak to Estee Lauder.
Yeah, and it's, you know, travel retail is really big over in Asia. It's like malls at the airport, right? Like people must get there a day ahead of time almost. So, when they were not traveling over in China, it really hurt the business. And then you had the resellers too that were buying and then taking product home to resell. So they're buying in the travel channel. And that really hurt business too after they cracked down on that. So that's really been the major issue with Estee, has been, you know, the China business, which I think we're seeing finally stabilize. A couple more months of tough comps there, but as we go into the back half, it should be much easier. And then the travel retail, which it does seem like inventory is getting cleaned up there. So, you know, hopefully we're almost beyond the worst there.
Susan, let's talk about the consumer in general. I think the crux to it all. The consumer seems to be tapped. And again, there are multiple consumers, different target markets. You got the bottom 50% of people. They tend to be very tapped right now. We saw that with our Couche Tard results up here in Canada, how by people are buying less smokes and chips at Circle K when they go to the gas station. But I'm even seeing some of the high-end brands give back. Hermes, that stock is giving back. Polo Ralph Lauren, it's giving back a little bit. Monster Beverage, lost some mojo. So just some anecdotal brands that I'm sort of paying attention to that are losing some love. But you know it's turning the corner again. I was talking sector-wise now. Insurance continues to have a nice bit to it. Some travel is working. Some healthcare is working. Industrials, they're on fire. Most industrials have to do building, infrastructure. That stuff is working. Pepsi's not working. McDonald's is breaking down. So all this stuff around the consumer, I'm getting some mixed messages. What do you think is in store for the consumer for the next 12 months, Susan?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely seeing, you know, wallets become more pinched, credit card balances are higher. You know, it definitely feels like they're reaching. It's, you know, we haven't really seen as much cool down in inflation that we would have liked. And so that's really just hurting their spending power. And so they're really having to pick and choose where they spend. Not that they're not spending, because, you know, some numbers are still pretty good, like you mentioned, but I think they're just really having to pick and choose and maybe buy a little bit less here and buy a little bit less there. It definitely seems like they're still spending on experiences and travel, and beauty goes right along with that. But something like a LVMH handbag, that, you know, it just seems like those types of things is kind of where, you know, they usually start to cut back first. So, you know, unemployment's still pretty low in the U.S. So, you know, we're not expecting a massive fall off the cliff or anything. But, you know, I do think that we're going to continue to see consumer spending slow, just because they can't continue to spend at the rates that they have been.
We're chatting with Susan Anderson. She's one of our analysts in the United States, right here at Canaccord, just talking about the health of the consumer and some beauty brands and other consumer brands that she has complete coverage on. We're going to take a quick break, get right back to the show about money, Hi-Fi Radio. If you have any questions, by the way, for Jack or I, it's wolfgangklein.com. TheWolfOnBayStreet.com. Please reach out to us. We always love to speak with you. And don't forget, work, save, invest. It's a show about money. More of it right after this. Oh, that is so good. If you're bored, look for that one on YouTube. Sinead O'Connor doing Nothing Compares to You live. Oh, such a passion. I was in Dublin in the summer of last year, and just after the world lost Sinead, and the whole town was mourning her loss. What a beautiful woman. Fabulous performer. And she just nailed it time and time again. Yep, she certainly changed her appearance. And she last interview I saw with her, she was Muslim, wearing the jihad, and very, very proud of it. And a woman in change. Susan Anderson is joining us. I always like to talk to Susan because I speak to my daughter about her makeup every day. It's a fun conversation as she goes about doing it. And she's a big fan of Elf Beauty. My daughter said everyone's stocked up on the stuff, so no need to buy the stock in here. That's according to my daughter. We sold the stock at $1.90. Great pass. We had a great trade on that name. Thank goodness. I will see what they have going for them, Susan. I'm going to go back to your Elf for a moment. And you know this, is that they're able to produce high-quality products at a low price point. Dollarama is a price-pointed type company up here in Canada making new all-time highs. Walmart looks pretty healthy. Costco's a store that Jack always scratches his head, right? Jack, how much do you tend to spend, or his wife tend to spend?
Too much, Wolf. Way too much. It's embarrassing to say on air.
But it's remarkable. That's a very unique consumer, that Costco consumer, because it's you who told me, Jack, that it is, of course, a consumer targeting the high end. And yeah, $1,000 tickets are not uncommon at a place like that. But you know what, as well, Susan, I think my daughter just likes to go to these stores, like a Shoppers Drug Mart, with her friends to talk about product. And it's an experience for them. It's something to do, which actually I'm okay with. Put the phone down, get out in the real world, and even if you have to go shopping at the mall, go to the mall is okay.
Yeah. So still consumers, and it's really lots of times the stores, especially the beauty stores, are just packed with teens, right? So I think that shopping in store at these places, you know, it's still a primary way to shop for beauty. So I don't think that's going away.
You like shopping, Jack? You're more Canadian Tire kind of a guy. But you like walking the aisles of Canadian Tire?
I do very little shopping, Wolf.
I know.
Very
little. But would you Costco?
You like the, I'll walk around, but I don't do it very often. I don't find it enjoyable, that's for sure.
I have two shopping experiences I actually enjoy. I do enjoy buying good quality food. Oh, Susan, I ate some sea bass last night, grilled on the barbecue, yeah. Olive oil. A big chunky piece. It's expensive, like $55 a pound. But a pound will feed about three people. It is the fine. I've never had such a piece of sea bass. Oh, boy. Yeah. I like to eat well, Susan. But how about that? You don't cover any restaurants. The dining experience, I don't know about in the United States of America, and I think it's the same. It has gotten outrageously priced, Susan. Am I missing something here?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, definitely. It's the same here.
Like, my son's even complaining about McDonald's, but I had fish and chips for the family.
I've heard about McDonald's. Is like, you might as well go to Chipotle, I think.
Yeah, I'm not a Chipotle kind of a guy.
Well, it's not just that, Wolf. It's also the tips, too.
Right? Well, the tips kill us.
It used to be 15%.
Excuse me, it used to be 10.
Yeah, so yeah, 10, 15, now it's 25.
Insane, yes. But, make it 100.
But you talk about big box stores, shopping in malls, Susan. Social media, influencers. Which brands or which companies do you cover that are leveraging social media the best and taking it to scale?
Yeah. Well, I think e.l.f. is really one of the best ones that I cover, and that's why they're doing so well. You know, they started on the internet. They were first on TikTok. They're always first on all of these platforms, and they just do a really good job on social media. But, you know, that said, like, everyone is utilizing social media. You cannot not use social media now, right? I mean, Olaplex, too, which we cover, you know, they pretty much started on social media, and that's really the only place they put their dollars up until, call it, a year or so ago. So, you know, I think you can't be a beauty brand without a really good social media marketing platform.
Susan, again, being an expert of consumers, do you pay a lot of attention to the stats around media patterns and the change in media taste by demographic?
Yeah. So, you know, we definitely pay attention to all of these brands that we cover, you know, their TikTok subscriber growth, the follower growth, Instagram. Those are really the two big platforms, I think, now for beauty and a lot of consumer goods. Short media, right? That's kind of like the big thing, which is what you see on TikTok or YouTube. That's kind of the new marketing vehicle. But yeah, we definitely, it's such a big part of what's driving these brands. We pay a lot of attention to it.
So a friend of mine, Susan's in the fashion business, and just for fun, his daughter managed to get her hands on some pretty interesting vintage clothing. Nice. And so in the store on the weekend, a couple weeks ago, in the basement, they had a vintage sale. I'm not sure if it was $1,500 or $15,000, but a lineup down the street and around the corner showed up, exclusively promoted on TikTok by one of the children a few days prior to the event. I don't know what you would have been a fan of. Maybe you were a Michael Jackson fan back in the day, Susan. Let's just say you were. And you bought a Michael Jackson t-shirt and you wore it for 25 years, you know, 10 to bed. And, you know, but you finally threw it out and someone got their hands on it and resold that t-shirt that you paid $12 US for about $45 US today. That same t-shirt, that particular t-shirt. Yeah. If there's a hole in it, it's worth another $5.
Yes. Vintage is in.
And baggy pants are in, Susan, amongst teens.
Yeah. Where the skinny jeans are, you know, I mean, people still wear them, but they're out. Baggy's in.
Does that mean I have to get rid of my skinny jeans? Like, I'm 59 years old. Back to baggy?
I think you can wear both now. But if you want to be hip, you have to be baggy.
There you go, Jack.
I like to stay in between, Wolf. I never went skinny, never went baggy. Just kind of go right down the middle. I'm always in style.
That's the funniest thing you've said all year, Jack. I like that, right down the middle. And
Masters Weekend, Wolf. Come on.
Yeah, that's like, is Masters Weekend?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's going to be great. That is going to be great. That is. What's with that green jacket? Can't they do something about that? That thing's ugly, Susan.
I know.
Like, really? Traditions, eh? Traditions, you know, sacred cows. They make the best burgers, I was told. Again, I like food. What else, Susan? Give us some other trends that's catching your attention right now, just, you know, en masse. What's really standing as a, wow, this is interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, I think, e.l.f.'s purchase of Naturium, right? So masstige skincare is on fire right now, which is, you know, a lot of it sold in Target, Ulta. A lot of new brands there. I think it's like one of the hottest, it's the highest growth category within beauty right now. So, you know, still a lot of newness. I know we talked earlier about not as much as a couple years ago, but I think especially in skin, there's going to be a lot of newness still yet to come.
I thought Botox solved all those problems.
Yeah, well, now people want, you know, something that is more natural, that there's no recovery time, you know, they don't have to like hide themselves in their house for like 5 days or whatever it takes. So, so I think we're looking for things now where, you know,
instant.
You can solve problems without
instantaneous gratification. Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. Well, if you do, I don't do Botox, never Botox, but if you do Botox, you have to hide away for a few days?
I think you do. Yeah, I think maybe some of those, it depends on what it is, but some of those I think you do.
Yeah, botulism. I just couldn't get my head around putting botulism in my body. Susan Anderson, that's been a delight. Thank you for your time. It is a fascinating category, I must admit. I do enjoy watching the consumer and consumer trends. What's old is new. What's new is old. My friends, don't throw away any fashion. Hang on to it. Trust me, hang on to it. This is considered an investment, basement, you know, a few mothballs so it doesn't get eaten up. You'd be surprised. It could be some gold right beside your comic books and trading cards, perhaps. Susan, a real pleasure. Thank you very kindly. We're going to take a quick break and speak to a behavioral scientist, Mr. Amos Nadler. He is mourning the grandfather of behavioral finance. So we'll talk about that right after this.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
There you go, Amos. That's what you mean to me, buddy. Amos Nadler, he's a founder and a chief scientist at Professor of Wall Street. Amos has been on the show many times. He's into behavioral finance. Now, I'll tell you something, friends, boys and girls, brothers and sisters. When I joined Bay Street, it was 2001, 9/11, that's when I began. A very smart friend of mine, his name is Kumar Hussain, an absolute genius. We called him Q. And he said, Wolf, you want to learn about behavioral finance, and when you manage money, you need to follow a process. Stick to a process, repeat your process, and you will be fine. And, you know, those words really stuck with me. 23 years later, here I am. And I will say that we have defined our process very, very well back at the shop. And when it comes to behavioral finance, I have learned with the help of Amos and with Jack and with all of my doings and teachings that in many ways I can be my own worst enemy. So therefore, I'm trying to be like water, go with the flow, watch the charts, and try to keep my personal biases aside because for the most part, I'm jive talking. So Amos, let's talk about quants, trading quants. It's amazing when you get these models. With Jack and I built a quant technical model, and it's working like a charm. Go to our website. It's called the S&P 25. There's 25 stocks out of the S&P 500. The 12-month return on that quant strategy is 36%. I said 36% 12-month return. It's amazing because, you know, what ends up happening is stocks end up in the portfolio that I would never have purchased. In fact, this week, we purchased Domino's Pizza. I hate the company. It's screening like a son of a gun. So follow the process. Over to you, my friend. Just to speak about what I just said to you in terms of my little pea brain involved versus following process. And the importance of it.
That's a beautiful tee up. Well, thank you so much for that. That's actually one of the pillars of Profit Wall Street is creating a repeatable, robust investment process. Your point about behavioral finance, that how we are our worst enemies is true because people, let's face it, don't follow a process. Many investment decisions, not just by retail investors, but some professionals, not you guys obviously, are driven by what we might call randomness, impulse, reactivity to what's happening in the market, which makes people subject to things like big price changes, glamour stocks, and other factors that are non-economic.
Let me, if I may, I'm going to stop you right there because I do pay attention to price changes, because that is, as far as I'm concerned, the ultimate arbiter of value is the market. It is price, the ultimate determinant of what something is worth. And if price is rising, I want to be there. If price is falling, I'm not going to lean towards economics and try to justify why the price is beyond where it should be. I'm going to respect the market and get out of the trade. What are your thoughts on that?
The key with price, so what does Buffett say? That price is what you pay, value is what you get. So price and fundamentals sometimes go in lockstep and sometimes they do not. Having a contrarian opinion when prices are going down and somebody makes an intelligent decision and buys something where the fundamentals are higher than the prices is an overreaction. That's like Thaler's hedge fund, for example. They try to take advantage of these opportunities. Our ability to cope with prices going up and going down is what gets people into trouble. Specifically, when prices go up and people have a gain, they tend to sell the gain too soon. I don't know if you guys do that.
Nope. Let it ride. You have to let it ride. We own NVIDIA, my friend. We bought it in January, up 97%. It hasn't broken technicals. I'm letting it run. But if something starts to go the other way, the market's saying, Wolf, you're wrong. I can argue till I'm blue in the face, but you know something? The bank teller doesn't care how I made or lost money. All they want to know is how much I'm taking out or depositing. They don't care where it came from. So I'm trying to find some new religion here and stick to it. And I know, but I mean this wholeheartedly. I can justify so many stocks. They're going lower. You want to talk about J&J? Come on, J&J. Everyone uses baby powder. Everyone buys Band-Aids. Everyone buys on all their products. Stock's not working. Bell Canada, nine dividend almost. Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. A dividend trap like Bell Canada with a nine dividend yield.
Mm-hmm.
And the stock's going lower.
So what you're playing on, Wolf.
But can speak to that, Amos.
Well, the trap of going lower, justifying, like, so in behavioral finance, we call that loss chasing, where you actually add to a position in the losing. If the current price is lower than your ACB, people do get into trouble.
Big mistake.
Because they have a tough time accepting that they're wrong.
Correct.
What you're describing, Wolf, is strict loss control. I'm willing.
So
I'm
important.
Max downside, and I act on it.
Yep.
Without emotion,
yep.
I'm out.
That's the way to do it, I believe. Do you agree?
That's part of the process. Part of the process.
No, I've learned, my friend, and it's difficult. Let your winners run and cut your losses. The sooner you cut them, the better. Because if you don't cut them, they will cut you. You know, but it's amazing. But the narrative on NVIDIA right now is, oh, it's too high. Got to sell. I can't tell you how many people we came across that have talked and selling NVIDIA. And the market's saying, I don't think so. It's a big, the direction is up. Take out a crayon and put it and draw an arrow up or down. And that's the other thing I like to do. You know, if the stock's rolling over, and I just did this with my team the other day because I want to sell a position. It was just beginning to break, early warning signal. It doesn't mean it will break. It's an early warning signal. Something can happen called a whipsaw. Tough. Got to accept that risk. That is a risk. That you get whipsawed, the stock goes higher. That is the risk of getting out. But when you see these things roll, I then ask, all right, would you buy this stock today with new money? And if the answer is no, it's probably a sell. What do you think of that logic?
We are so colored, whether you own the asset or not. Like you're saying, that there's actually a very interesting paper in neuroscience about this, showing that your ability to learn and form opinions about a stock are different whether you own it already or do not own it.
Yeah, that's
so
interesting.
The mental exercise you're proposing is actually quite difficult because our brains, we process information differently, whether we have stake in something or do not.
Yeah.
So it's a good exercise to go through.
I like what you're saying too. That's why I do like having a small position. But you know what Kevin Vandermeer, our branch manager, said to me the other day, Jack? It was actually the smartest thing he said to me. this week. Covering my butt there. I don't want to get fired just yet. He said, Wolf, you know what you should do? Just take the name off the chart. Just look at the chart. Take the name away. What do you think of that, Jack? Take the name away.
Well, then you're truly listening to the market,
that's it.
Right?
Do you think it makes sense? Do you think it's smart?
I think it does.
I think it makes sense.
Because you talk about biases. Everyone has bias. If you look at Domino's Pizza chart, do you like it or don't you? Forget the name.
That's exactly my point. So I like that. Just take the name off the chart. That said, you know, the question is almost, how can we use gray matter to truly add value? Because I'm always fighting. Like, I'm a human too. And I say, you know, I'm getting some signals over here that say hold, other signals to say sell. What's my gut telling me? And try to follow your gut. So let's play off that talk. You know, there's more neuroreceptors in your intestines than there are in your brain. Fact. So Amos, should we follow and listen to our gut? And if so, how do we do that, my Zen master?
I love that question. Perfect tee up. We have multiple signals happening all the time about most things. Being able to parse through those signals to be in the highest, what we might call fidelity to reality, will put you in the best situation. Let me tell you exactly how we do that. So Profit Wall Street, the first invention was, let's create analytics that allow people to see their biases. So if I had access to your trade data, which you're welcome to send me, I'll do it for free for you guys, no problem. I'll show you what specific biases you have and show the upside. What I realized is that knowing your biases is not enough in the heat of the moment. In the heat of the moment, we're driven by impulse, we're driven by our guts. Let me provide you with a framework that allows you to parse through the technicals, parse through the fundamentals, and even asks about your emotional state and what your expectations are about the asset in the relevant period. That's called smart trade. So you're encouraged to express all of your opinions and provide what we're calling metadata along with the trade data, and then look back and see whether your gut was right or not. So that's how we deal with it. We don't deny that we're human. We don't deny that we have gut impulses. We do know that greed and fear tend to put people to sell winners too soon, or buy stocks that are going up for behavioral reasons versus technical or economic reasons, you know, FOMO. And what we can do is, once we have that data, we can parse that for you and help you understand whether your gut is serving you well or not. Because there are people who actually are kind of savants at reading charts and pulling information from different sources. The majority of people do not. But the key is, we have a process that's repeatable and data that helps you understand what your strengths and weaknesses are. That's how we get through with the process, with that kind of human-machine interaction.
We are speaking with the PhD, Amos Nadler, founder and chief scientist at Professor of Wall Street. Yes, you lost a great man in, Daniel Kahneman? Is that correct?
The
grandfather of behavioral finance, founded in the 60s. I wonder if he was a hippie. Mm-hmm. but got the Nobel Peace Prize in 2002, so there obviously was something there. And we have found the enemy, and it is I, so they say. Hi-Fi Radio, it's a show about money. Work, save, invest, repeat. Then you get to play, invest, repeat. You're always investing. Don't stop investing. Good quality assets. And make sure you have enough that you can, you know, live off of 4% or 5%. You'll never run out. That's the key. Retire with more than you need. Then you can manage your drawdown and always have enough money. It's amazing. I sat down with two ladies, 191, 192, in the last 5 days. Sharp as tacks, healthier than healthy. We are living longer. That is a risk. I'm going to deal with that as well. Lots of risks, but you got friends. And Jack and I, never hesitate to call us. TheWolfOnBayStreet.com, WolfgangKlein.com. Going to get right back to Amos after we pay some bills around the Chorus Broadcasting Empire down here in Queens Quay. Lovely, lovely location, lovely venue, and it's lovely to spend an hour with you. Thank you for spending it with us as well. Stay tuned. More show right after this.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto.
Welcome back. The doctor is in the house. His name's Amos Nadler. He's from California. Cool state, man. You must miss it, eh?
I do.
Yeah. And if I were to move to the States, that would be the first state I would like to live in. It's lovely, lovely climate and lots of variety, lots to do, lots of traffic too, mind you, but a lot of think tank out there. So I'm not surprised that's where you are from. Mamas, do you know offhand, they once had a, and I think it took place in Berlin, I'm not sure, someplace in Europe, maybe Amsterdam, when AI and Bitcoin was being created, a bunch of thinkers around the topic of blockchain congregated and just basically met, like had a big sleep in for weeks on end in some European city. Just out of curiosity, do you know what city I'm talking about and who the lead man was in that project?
No? I don't know if you're referring to the mysterious Satoshi Nakamoto. I don't know if you're talking
about that. Like, I think that's the one. I think that yes, that is correct. Well done. Well done. Yeah, yeah. You give that man a prize. Yeah, what's his name again?
Well, there's this mysterious figure known as Satoshi Nakamoto.
Yes.
He is considered the... So I could speak to that. There's a great, it's shrouded mystery who this person is.
Go ahead. That's fun.
Whether it's an individual or a group of people, it's a very hotly contested question. There's a legal case about it with a person who claims to be Satoshi. It's quite a wild ride if you want to dig into it.
I want to pivot over to behavioral finance because I tell you what I get to watch is my 20-year-old son trading coins on these obscure exchanges that are certainly attracting a lot of money and dealing with all kinds. What I'm seeing in Elliot with his crypto activity is the .com 2.0 and the Wild Wild West. And along that, you're dealing with testosterone juiced up 20-year-olds, dealing with wins and losses. And you want to talk about FOMO. There are kids, according to my son, who have traded crypto and have made millions. And so all the kids in the playground want to get a piece of it. And so much so that they just lock themselves in their bedroom and glue themselves to screens. And guess what? They're markets. And the truth is, markets are markets. The characters change, but the activity doesn't. Almost speak to that.
Oh, there's so much to unpack. Let's unpack the asset itself, whether you actually want to call that an asset or not is up for debate. The exchanges themselves, I actually did due diligence on the crypto exchanges. This is about 4 years ago now. And I can tell you that you're talking about people locking themselves in their bedroom. Some of the exchanges are run out of like basements. There's thousands of crypto exchanges.
How many?
Coins. Well, last time when I did due diligence on this topic, they were in the hundreds possibly.
Of exchanges themselves. Like the Toronto Stock Exchange is an exchange for stocks. The Vancouver Exchange is actually owned by the Toronto, is the second one. All we have in Canada, two exchanges and one options exchange for all the securities in Canada. Now Elliot was to tell me that there's about four or five major exchanges. But his money, by the way, Jack, in one of these exchanges was being hacked by bots, and the bots were trying to slow the system down. No one truly knows, but his money was frozen for 4 days. He couldn't get it out. Which is, again, all part of that wild, wild west mentality. But the true behavioral activity, FOMO,
the stories.
Because the stocks move so quick. So I think it's the behavioral finance on steroids because this stuff trades so quickly. It comes and it goes like Dogecoin off the board. So I don't know, do you not find that whole space that much more fascinating, you know, you, the behavioral scientist?
Absolutely. The number of coins is astronomical. The amount of manipulation is astronomical. There's actually been very clear research showing how there's these pump and dump groups that show up on Discord, and they charge people to get in early before you start pumping the coin. So the more you pay, the sooner you get the signal. And these exchanges that allow these, they actually see a decline in revenue after because they're orchestrating these manipulations on these exchanges. And it's the Wild West. There's really very little regulation. The SEC is trying to figure it out. The Canadian government's trying to figure out how do you regulate? How do you find that balance between allowing kids to go and basically throw their money away? The trading fees are extremely high to onboard onto, like, I don't want to name any particular one, but it's like 4% into one of the biggest exchanges. Think about that. You're losing 4% on the way in and losing 4%, unless the rates may have changed, but could you imagine?
Well, no, it's funny because I was speaking to Elliot about tax, and I said, how do you get your money out of this? He said, well, we really don't, because if you take the money out and you bring it back to currency, fiat paper that you and I deal in, it has to end up in your bank account. You know, you could be tripping a tax signal. But they're trading the stuff without paying tax, which is interesting. They are keeping it in a secured wallet, but when they put these into a soft, take their coin into a soft wallet, the slightest mistake on the keyboard can cost them to lose their money, because behind the scenes, someone's waiting for you to make a mistake, gaining access to your information and stealing your coins. A very common activity that seems to be taking taking place. And the pump and dump theme is just that. It's true. There's a load of pump and dump in this stuff here. And no one's really talking about it. The kids know it. They get in early. They all go up. Just make sure you exit the trade. And some of them will pop 10x within 10 minutes. I mean, 10 times your money in 10 minutes. So irrational.
That's the point, though, Wolf. People are irrational. People are irrational when it comes to these asset classes.
It's unbelievable.
And behavioral finance is, I'm going to say, the study of that irrationality. People talk about efficient market theory. Not so. Not true.
Almost, you got 15 seconds here for that one.
Yeah, efficiency means that the prices reflect fundamental value. What is the fundamental of a coin? These coins can be replicated by just copying a GitHub repository. So I don't know if you believe in what the actual intrinsic value of it is. Maybe we save that for another chat.
Yeah, no, it's a wild one because, again, I spoke to Mike. I'm going to bring actually Elliot and a couple of his friends on along with the guys from BitBuy and what's the other company?
WonderFi.
And WonderFi. We're going to actually have a round table. Maybe we'll bring you in for that round table. We'll do the whole show around crypto. Amos Nadler, he's a chief scientist at the Professor of Wall Street, the Prof of Wall Street. You want to check out the site. Pretty cool stuff. I want to wish you all a great weekend. We're here for you, Jack and I. Please, any questions, reach out to us. It's all about helping you build wealth, have more money so you can, take care of yourself and live a long, happy life and take care of your family and give back. And, something, financial freedom is a good thing. It really, really is. Let us help you get there. Have a great weekend and speak to you next Saturday, 7 p.m. right here on 640 in Toronto.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.